Point of View on Kaya 959. On the street, on the air.
Nosipho Zakai, FM reporter, was out in Pimville this past weekend. Nosipho, good evening, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Yes, good evening, Oliver, and thank you for having me on the show.
You were in Pimville this weekend. Walk us through the day. How did it start out? What time did you get there? And what was the turnout like? Was it as expected? Do you think COVID at all deterred people from coming out in the streets? Usually there's festivities around it. There's cars hooting. There's T-shirts handing out. And there's dancing and singing. And there's this house to house. And usually when a big public figure like the president comes out, it's even more, voluminous in terms of the amount of people that come out. But did it meet expectations?
Sure. So as you mentioned, I was in the community of Pimville, Ward 22 in Soweto, where some residents actually used the voter registration weekend as an opportunity to voice their grievances. Yeah. And that was over the long-standing electricity issues in the area. Now, Oliver, residents felt they had been left to languish in the darkness after being without electricity for just over a year. And that was after a transformer had busted in the area. So the residents deciding to prevent the voter registrations from happening. And they said that this stance was, the only way they could be heard and also just, to force officials to act. So this was all happening while the ANC was kicking off its voter registration campaign drive. As you mentioned, that was in another part of Soweto. Also experiencing similar electricity issues where residents had been without electricity for long periods of time. So during this visit with President Cyril Ramaphosa and his ANC delegation, he'd actually told residents that, his administration would be working to sort out those long-standing electricity challenges. And they, caused by those illegal connections, overloading of the grid, as well as backyard dwellers, among other issues. So, the first day of the voter registration in the area really overshadowed by those electricity concerns raised. But Sunday, Oliver, not any better. And that was because, unfortunately, the night before, we had learned of the untimely passing of Johannesburg Mayor Julie D. Matongo, who the community leaders had actually felt was willing to hear them and resolve the issue of restoring power. And so for them, hearing of his passing was sort of a knock to the community who were encouraged by his presence the day before during that ANC visit to the area. So, Oliver, this week we wait and see because promises were made by politicians as well as ward councillors to the community that they'd be back with possible solutions to the long-standing challenges around those electricity issues facing communities. So this week, really, all eyes still on that area of Pimville in Soweto.
President Ramaphosa once again making, those promises he made about a million houses when there was unrest in just before the national government election out in Alex a few years ago. The promises he made over the weekend about setting up a team that's going to take a look into the Eskom crisis of electricity in Soweto, and they must report to him by Tuesday. It gave me a reminiscence of that Alex sort of campaign trail of 2018. From what you were able to tell on the ground, did people know that they were able to register online, or did everybody just sort of rely on the physical IEC voter registration booth?
So there were, the younger residents were aware that they actually could do this, but for them, it's not so easy to get, you're living in an area with no electricity. So network is obviously also an issue around that area. So for them, it was a bit of a knock because then they actually having the voter registration there station, being able to access it was for them easier than having to sort of get this online thing going for them. So, there were some residents who were not happy at this demonstration or this prevention of the voter registrations from taking place. But the sentiment that I got from most was that, yes, we are being prevented from doing this, but, the bigger picture is that we really need people to come down here and to hear us. And this is the opportunity we're going to use because we need electricity back. People had been living living without electricity for over a year. One woman saying to me, 13 months, she's been having to use paraffin. And, you know, it's not safe. It's not healthy having to inhale those fumes. There's also the risk of fire. So really, people felt like, you know, their electricity issues sort of outweighed this voter registration weekend.
Seemingly, it will also perhaps outweigh the actual event of voting on come the day of election.
And
how did the ANC, outside of the president making those promises, how did those who were draped in ANC regalia, how did they respond to the disgruntled residents? Was there civil-like conversations that they have access to them? Were they able to make it into their homes to hand out these flyers and T-shirts, assuming they had any? Or did the residents keep them at arm's length and told them, don't come near us?
So when the president sort of started with this this campaign, this voter registration campaign drive, they were in Nomzamo, and that's where I went. So I followed them to Nomzamo as well as Shawelo. And so when they were engaging the community, it was sort of easy because community members also did want to, you know, voice that they wanted the politicians to hear that, you know, this is what we're dealing with, and we really need you guys to do something about this, because if you don't, then it means that we will be forced to withhold our votes, and then there's no point in us registering because we're not going to head to the polls in November, because, you know, we're still living in the same conditions that we've been asking you to address for long periods of time. So yeah, for them, the politicians were it were sort of a welcome site, even though, you know, at one point they were being heckled, residents saying, you know,
right,
how could you come here? Well, we still have these issues. But I think the bigger picture was that, you know, this was the opportunity to raise those issues and to sort of, you know, tell politicians that, hey, if you don't sort this out, then we will then have to withhold our votes and we won't be heading to the polls. And then you will feel it.
I'm curious, Nosipho, did any partisan issues come up? Because we know across the province and across the country, various ANC branches not being happy about the ward councillor candidates that are fronted on the lists that were submitted to the IEC and that will be submitted to the IEC the second time around, saying that this is not the candidate they voted for in their respective branches, being disgruntled about it. Did any of that sentiment come up at any point over the weekend?
Well, unfortunately, not from where I was, because I was mostly dealing with residents and the issues that they were raising. So for me, a lot of what came out that weekend, was, you know, the promises made to the community and the community, you know, saying that this is what they need to happen. And yeah, just addressing the electricity for residents was really what came up. So the politics of it or partisan issues, not something that I really dealt with this weekend.
Nosipho, thank you so much for your reports on this. Really do appreciate it. And thank you so much for your time. And of course, like I said, we're going to be in conversation with the national chairperson of the EFF, Veronica Mente, who was out and about on the street this past weekend, trying to canvass as many people to register to vote. And of course, hopefully then vote for the EFF. Veronica now joins me on the line. Veronica, thank you so much for your time and good evening.
Good evening, Oliver, and thank you very much for having us. Good evening to listeners.
Veronica, you guys put out a lengthy statement, and I'll start here on the response to the Constitutional Court's decision this morning to dismiss the Democratic Alliance's challenge against the IEC for deciding to reopen the candidate roll for ward councillors. What's the EFF in a nutshell? What's the EFF's position for those who may have missed the statement?
Now, we had a statement before when the IEC decided to open for candidates. We haven't issued a statement now, simply because the ruling came out when we were busy with our CCT meeting preparing for the manifesto launch, and we're still applying our minds, looking into the judgment, and we'll act thereafter.
But just sort of extemporaneously, give me your intuition. Is this a win for democracy? Does this make the upcoming election fairer or less fair?
Well, we'll look into it in the beginning, as we have stipulated in our statement at the time, that our democracy would be tainted if certain things are right. overlooked and not done accordingly. But as for the Constitutional Court judgment now, I cannot really say much because we didn't really have time to look into it. We are still looking into it. We just came out of the meeting now.
Yeah, I want us to spend the bulk of this conversation for the limited time we have here talking about the manifesto launch coming up, and we'll take a look at some of the key highlights that will come out of that manifesto. But let's talk about this weekend's registration drive. You guys were out in KZN, Julius Malema was in KZN, was met with quite a lot of hostility there, specifically, I guess, from ANC supporters. But KZN is also a place where the EFF did not perform very well in the last two bulk of local of by-elections that took place earlier this year, about 4 months ago, and in November last year. So strategically, I'm assuming that is a place you guys wanted to start your canvassing in. Give me a reflection of the weekend out in KZN.
Okay. No, let me start here on the issue of by-elections. We, the EFF, have been participating in all by-elections, and in actual fact, EFF has never lost a single vote. We are growing faster, and we're growing all 100% of the number we have acquired in our previous elections. So the fact that the by-elections are sometimes won even with one vote, but the EFF on its own has never lost a single vote to any by-election. So
yeah, you haven't lost votes. You have accumulatively more votes than, say, 2016, right? But in KZN in particular, you have lost certain wards.
No, we have never lost any ward. In KZN, we have never, we didn't have a ward where we have lost it. We have accumulated quite a number of votes, and we are comfortable in the space of KZN. You will also look at the 2019 elections, we grew 500% more than the 2014 elections. Even from the 2016 elections, we grew more than 300%. So we are very much comfortable in the space of KZN. But to answer your question in terms of what the incidents of the weekend and our campaign on the past weekend, as you would know, that it was the registration weekend, and the EFF were on the ground. We've been on the ground. We campaign, we're ground forces. We speak to our people. We are for the people. And as usual, we were all campaigning right across the country, and the president is the commander-in-chief. Was in KZN where he was met with some drunkards and some people who are unruly of the ANC. So with that, we view it as the most ill-disciplined manner, and which is not supposed to be commended or even allowed by the IEC, given that the electoral laws are very specific and clear in terms of the campaign. And if we are to declare these elections as free and fair, the electoral, the Independent Electoral Commission has to do something about such gruesome acts where people are blocked and barred from campaigning in certain areas. And you would ask yourself, if the ANC in the deep rural area of Gatambuza can do that to the EFF, which is the biggest third party in South Africa, how much more are the independents, the much smaller parties, coping in that kind of a space? And therefore, if the IEC is not paying attention and is not punishing such ill discipline in the space of elections, we will have to do something about it.
Yeah, obviously that sort of behavior by the ANC out in KZN in that particular area is deplorable and undemocratic. But let's take a look at the reason they cited as to why they tried to prevent you guys from accessing the voter registration area. They claim you guys were trying to bus in a bunch of people from another ward into that ward to come and register there so that you guys can swing the vote in that particular ward or in that particular area in a certain way. I guess they're trying to say you guys are performing some act of gerrymandering. Is there any truth to it?
That's absolutely rubbish. You know, what's happening, Oliver, the fact that the ANC is thinking that it's very comfortable in the spaces of rural areas, it shocks them to see the kind of a campaign which the EFF now has rolled out. And given their instability within the ANC now, we are sending the shockwaves down their spine, and they do not know what to do. They do not know how to counter the forces of the red wave. So the only thing that's left for them to counter the forces of the red wave is violence. And we're not scared of violence, but because we are law-abiding citizens, we will leave these things to the authorities that are accredited to deal with such spaces and to ensure that the protection of the voters and the protection of the politicians are held up high. And therefore, if ever that space is left to the hooligans, who, when they see other political parties and they think that if they are not campaigning, things will just fall into place for themselves, their instability is none of our problem. And how we have viewed the incident itself is the fact that the ANC was shocked, and the ANC did not expect to see the campaign, thought that all of us will be campaigning. Remember that. The ANC has been tricking everyone in the country by keeping us under the regulations and telling people to stay at home and all those people. And
but Veronica, you can't claim that to be a trick when there's a real scientific and clinical reason to put people under a hard lockdown when, you know, people are dying. Now, but I want us to take a break here, Veronica, and come back. I want us to speak about the substance of what the EFF promises in the election, in the local government election this time around. We'll touch on that just now. You are listening to Point of View, the Monday edition, with me, Oliver Dixon, standing in for Ozpemele Mutene, who is not with us this evening. I'm in a conversation with the EFF National Chairperson, Veronica Mente, and we're discussing the EFF's promises in this round of local government elections. It is the second time the EFF participates in the local government elections. You would remember that they hung a few metros the last time around. Became kingmakers in several parts of the country in key metros. And subsequently, some of those relationships turned sour. Some of them are surviving, like the one in Tambazimbi out in Limpopo. Still a coalition government where the EFF and the DA relationship is still holding on there. But in every part of the country, it's not holding on so well and frankly soured. Veronica, will the EFF consider, Julius Malema said, we'll never vote with the DA again. Will the EFF consider it if the numbers play out in a similar fashion this time around?
Now let's first quickly address the issue of the trick and the science you spoke about. We were the first ones to identify and make everyone aware that science dictates that people should be indoors until we find a solution to the pandemic. Yet, even after Judge Musaneke said, science also dictates that we should at least wait until the pandemic has given us enough time for us to gain some sort of immunity. And everyone else said, go out. So you cannot say now, people must still stay at home, a couple of hundreds must be outside, when on the actual voting day you are going to be having thousands. Where will the science on the first?
But your claim in particular was, Veronica, hold on. Your claim in particular was the ANC was tricking the country, which is not a fair position to take, given that the ANC was willing to abide by the Museneke report, right? But unfortunately, the Constitutional Court didn't agree. So there's a constitutional imperative to have this election, regardless of what the individual position of every single political party is.
The ANC president continued, even under those circumstances, the ANC president continued not to allow the country to work out in full force. And therefore, you cannot now, right now, as we speak, only a couple of hundreds of people should gather. Yet, on the 1st of November, thousands of people are going to be gathering in voting stations. Hundreds of people are going to be visiting your grandmother, my grandmother, our aunts, people of South Africa who cannot go out. And they are going to be visited by strangers, a couple of them in the same house, to make them vote for the election. Their president was supposed to have allowed people to go out and campaign. And if then their science says 500 people must go and campaign, yet on the first thousands of people are going to be out there, who will have convinced those thousands of people to go out and vote? Campaign means that you must do a door-to-door, you must do umdumdumi and speak to the people, convince people to vote for you. And that's what we are doing.
The very same report that you're speaking about, that the EFF contributed to, the Moseneke report, ended up saying that should we have to host the election this year, we do have in place certain plans to make sure that people are social distancing, that people are sanitized and masked the entire time, where we take the necessary non-pharmaceutical interventions at the voting polls to ensure that people vote safely. So again, it's a false start for you to say they misread the room. Perhaps they did, because the science is actually quite difficult to interpret as far as mass activities are concerned nationwide, right? And so I still maintain it is an unfair take for you to do. But let's move on, Veronica. Let's move on to the matter of EFF going into this election. Are you guys addressing the question of coalition governments and the question of coalition partnerships? Although you guys do say you were not in coalition with anyone, but are you addressing who you're voting for? Should the numbers again reflect a position where the EFF becomes kingmakers? Is it something that the manifesto coming out pretty soon, does it address it?
No, we're not addressing any of those things. I think we've made ourselves clear even in the previous press conference that we are in for a king. We are going to be mayors ourselves. We are going to take municipalities. If we have to engage in such a negotiation, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But for now, our ultimate...
I don't think it's very comforting to an EFF supporter who, you know, didn't like your partnership with the DA the last time around to be told that you'll cross the bridge when you get there. Surely you guys have some sort of reassurance.
It will be comfortable even at that point. We never spoke about negotiations, because what we are aiming for is a win. We are not aiming for a coalition with anyone. We are not aiming at any type of negotiations. Right now, we are aiming to govern the local municipalities and our metros. We are aiming to be mayors ourselves. If ever anything happens beyond that, and whatever results will then we get after the election, we'll then talk to it when we get to that point.
So the EFF is not keen on preemptively engaging in any sort of scenario planning?
No.
Okay. That's as clear as it gets. Let's talk about other promises that is to come in the manifesto. One of the key things that struck me as interesting about the EFF manifesto in the local government election of 2016 was that you guys promised that you will turn municipalities and metros into hubs of employment, job creation. Is that a promise that sticks around in this local government election manifesto? And if it is, can you talk to us a little bit briefly about the mechanics there of how do you plan on getting that done?
Okay, in our previous manifesto, and those are the things that we said, and they are not promises, those were commitments. Should we be governing, they remain our commitments. Yet even this year, we were engaging in consultative meetings right across the country where we're listening to people on what type of a local government are they looking for, what type of a local government
right.
that will make them comfortable. And from those points and from those cries, we therefore formulated a manifesto that speaks to the needs of the people.
List us the top three things that were key priorities in that you guys are addressing discursively in your manifesto.
Now, given the people's cries on the things that the people have been telling us about, people still do not have basic needs like electricity, water. Indigents are made to be pay for water services, for electricity services. They are made to pay for early childhood development, school of their children, and some of them, they don't even have those ECD centers. They do not have a sanitation in their schools. There's poor sanitation around townships. You can see there's dumping sites everywhere. People are unemployed. There's no industrialization. There's no special economic zones that are functioning. Some of them are existing in the spaces of Eastern Cape and some KZN, Mpumalanga. Yet those special economic zones, they are very meaningless right now, especially in particular after Corona. So we're talking into plans on how to revive all that. Types of economies, progression, employment for students like agricultural colleges, where we went to Dawung, where agricultural graduates could not find jobs. People that are still called emerging farmers, yet they've been in farming for quite some time, but simply because they have not been getting any support from government. Those are the things that we're going to be looking into, helping our people to build their local economy and ensuring that they create their own employment, they look after themselves, and government is doing what it has to do in terms of provision of all the basic and necessities, and where the indigents, like we have said in our previous manifesto, that the indigents should be subsidized by the people who have means to live. Those that have means must find a way of paying for the people who do not have means.
That's been a consistent position that the EFF has taken, and it's I think the DNA of the ENA of the EFF to be socialist leaning in that sense, right, where the haves will subsidize the have-nots. But in a country like ours, where there's 70% unemployment amongst young people, the haves don't quite have enough to subsidize the have-nots completely. How do you guys imagine that shortfall to be covered? How do you plan on using the budget at local government level to be able to cover that, right? Because indigent programs, for instance, oftentimes, municipalities and cities have to go and fundraise somewhere else to be able to cover that. It's not enough, the money that they get from treasury grants. Do you guys, have you thought about the economics around it?
Oh, very much. We have thought about it very much, because there's always this perception that municipalities cannot afford, municipalities cannot afford. One thing I can agree with you, though, is that budget-wise, in terms of municipalities, the 10% that gets allocated to municipalities from the national government is not enough, will never be enough, because we must understand that municipalities are at the cold face of the service delivery. And therefore, to allocate them 10% is just an insult to the people. However, the little budget that municipalities do have is mismanaged big time. The tenders, they tender for everything. They tender for toilet paper. They tender for water for meetings. They tender for petrol. They tender for everything that they should not be tendering for. And then in that process, they acquire unnecessary costs and unnecessary expenditures. And all those unnecessary expenditures have to be kept first. And the savings thereof should be directed to the services of the indigent. It's not a difficult thing to service the indigents where you are in a country like South Africa, where you can find people paying for rates. You pay for rates for your house. What do rates do? So to actually say the people that have do not really have, when they can pay rates which are equivalent to the amount of their house, and that those rates are not having a ceiling or whatsoever. And then we then say they cannot be directed into assisting the people who absolutely have nothing in the rural areas, where there is not even a wink of sewage. People in the rural areas...
Can I ask you this, Veronica?
On pit toilet.
You intrigue me with this point of municipalities unnecessarily tendering certain things that they can simply perform internally. Part of the reason some of this tendering happened is because they don't have the capacity internally, because then they'd have to start becoming employment agencies, employing a bunch of people to perform those services, which are in many times seasonal, right? Like potholes is an example I can think of. And the PFMA and MFMA are very clear on when to tender, when not to tender, and how you tender. How do you guys plan on changing the legislation? Because I think you will need legislative power to be able to change that.
No, we have started that process already. We have demonstrated the only way to get that situation is to enforce whatever human resource you require. You don't have to tender for people who must bring a toilet paper. When you have a messenger who gets a salary on a monthly basis, that can take money from the municipality, and the finance department must then budget how much toilet paper do they use a month. They must budget how many black bags does the community need? How much petrol do their fleet require? They don't need a tender for such when there is a messenger who is paid, and therefore you do not have to have 10 more people who are facilitating a budget on behalf of a finance office, which has manpower that gets paid as well.
Okay, insourcing, that's the answer. Just the last question as we wrap up this conversation. The EFF is launching their manifesto in a few days. On which day is it? And will you on that day also tell us who your mayoral candidates are for the respective cities and metros?
Everything else of the manifesto, you will hear it. Our manifesto for everyone in South Africa whom we love you very much. We invite you to come to our manifesto. It's going to be at Gandhi Square in Johannesburg on the 26th at 12. We are gathering their fighters, we're gathering their comrades, we're gathering their South Africans. Come and listen to the commitments of the EFF. And we would like to say to everyone, in particular young people, still continue registering online until the system is closed of midnight. It's still open, and register to vote and vote for the change. Vote for EFF.
Will Floyd Chivambu once again be the Johannesburg mayoral candidate? You can tell me. It's a secret. That stays between you. No, you can tell me. It stays between you and I.
Mayoral candidates. That's not in our culture. We don't talk about. We have never spoken about mayoral candidates.
Oh, but you did the last time when Fred Chivamba was busy debating Parks Tower and Herman Mashaba.
This time we have never spoken about mayoral candidates.
Okay. I guess there's a change in the culture of the EFF. Veronica, thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate it. Pule, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for joining us here on Point of View. Thank you for making up available the time. Good evening.
Good evening and evening to your listeners.
I'm afraid, Pule, I'm going to have to ask you the awkward question first, because this is top of mind for many South Africans who read the Sunday Times yesterday morning. An SIU report directly implicating you in irregular contract awarded by the Gauteng government. Will you step aside?
Well, I've clarified that question. I must also just advise that when you invite me to come and talk about matters of the ANC, let's not conflate it with the issues that were mentioned on in our personal capacity.
Unfortunately, accountability is a very uncomfortable exercise, and this is an ANC matter.
But if you do that, then I will have to then leave the show.
No, but unfortunately...
I'm just telling you...
Pule, I know you to be a person who doesn't run away from accountability.
I don't answer questions. I don't run that, but if you invite me and you want to talk about...
We'll get to it. We'll definitely get to it.
As a matter of principle, it must be for the last time that the media does this.
Pule, unfortunately, accountability is not comfortable. It cannot happen at your peril.
But when you called me to the show, you were calling me to the show to come and deal with issues. So if you told me that I'm coming to deal with this, I would have then made my mind if I want to come or not. You don't just call us to shows, and then when we're in the show, you start asking us.
We'll definitely get to the ANC election matters.
It doesn't happen like that.
So are you telling me you wanted to make up your mind about whether or not you want to be held accountable?
No. You know what, my brother? I'm afraid I'm going to have to leave the show. I'm just saying, when your producers call us to request us to come to interviews, they tell us the issues that they want us to talk about.
Okay, so quite simply, what I'm understanding...
I don't have a problem of talking about this thing, but this is not why I can read to your listeners what they told me when they invited me.
No, absolutely.
So when I was invited to the show, I was told that I'm going to be talking about the outcomes of the Concord.
Okay, we'll definitely get to that.
I'd gladly agree. That is how I was invited.
Just a yes or no, do you want to answer the question or not?
No.
Okay.
Don't do that.
Cool. So accountability is not the order of the day. Let's get to the ANC.
But my brother.
No, unfortunately, Pule, I'm not going to apologize for trying to hold you accountable. And if that's uncomfortable for you, I'm completely sorry about that. But now I know you don't want to answer the question, so we can move on.
No one said I don't want to answer. I'm simply saying to you, By the way, you don't do us a favor by inviting us to this radio shows.
Neither do you do us a favor by coming here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's okay then. By the way, I didn't call Kaya FM. It's Kaya FM that called me.
Pule, you are a public representative. You represent people of South Africa. Hold on. You are a public representative. And therefore...
that's where you get it wrong. That's where you get it wrong. You don't understand my role.
You are a member of the governing party,
I am,
are you not?
I am a member. I am the national spokesperson of the ANC. I am not a public representative. No, I am not elected by the people of South Africa as a whole to be national spokesperson. My election is only limited to people who are members of the ANC. If you yourself as a radio presenter are not a member of the ANC, you will not have participated in electing me. So don't confuse me with a member of parliament. I'm not a member of parliament. By the way, just to deal with your question and assist...
By the way, which you were a member of parliament at the time, right?
No. I was not. No, it doesn't matter whether I was a member of parliament or not.
Oh, now it does.
I think you have got a problem, my brother. And the challenge you have got is that you think that politicians are just people on whose head you can just play. It doesn't work like that. Number one, I'm refusing to... I've answered this question. I've been asked about this question over and over again. Let me just assist you. There is no SIU that is investigating me.
Okay.
So that I clear you. There's no SIU that has ever put questions forward to me. The Gauteng provincial government has never brought the report that was out in the Sunday Times to me. If those things were brought to my attention, I would have clarified myself. Fair to your listeners, I was not even a director at the time. What I did not want to do, I didn't want to conflate what I'm expected to do here on the show and what is my role in the African, what I'm expected to do here and what would have been my previous role elsewhere. No one in government has ever put this question that you, comrade journalist, want to put to me. I get this report you're talking about should have been done by government. If it is done by an institution of state, say the SIU has done the report, they could simply have called me if they wanted my opinion. The only people who have ever questioned me about this report is yourselves in the media. So now, why should I then be drawn and dragged into an investigation that is being done by the media and not by authorities? If authorities are sitting with a report that involves me, let them bring it forward. No one has ever brought this report to me. No one. I told the people I spoke to in the media earlier this. I'm telling you again this. And so now I don't know what else I'm supposed to be saying.
Okay.
If there was something that I had to really give out there, don't have a problem. Remember, when people who account for something they know about. But I don't know about this thing. I'm only seeing it in the press. I've never been approached by a state institution about these things that you are putting forward to me. So how do you expect me to answer stuff that I know nothing about? No one has ever brought these things to my attention. No. I'm sure there are many others who are listening to this show. I'm sure those who are in authority also listen to your shows as well, because I could hear the kind of bravery through which you're expressing yourself when you started. Now, just understand this. The reason I didn't want to really get into this is because I know nothing about this. It is only yourselves in the media who are bringing this thing to my attention. If there is a report that implicates me, the people who wrote that report must then bring it to my attention. I don't know who did the report. I don't know under whose orders or instructions were they acting. No one has ever...
Under the orders of the president who signed off the powers for the SIU. They were acting under the...
No. You are confusing things. There's a proclamation signed by the SIU, which also has got nothing to do with me. In your spare time...
No, the proclamation was signed by the president, Pule, to the SIU.
No, but I'm helping you. In your spare time, go read that proclamation. The report you're talking about and the proclamation are two different things. The proclamation... It's a proclamation done by the president to investigate matters involving Jidat, Ekuruleni, and the motorized three-wheelers, whether they were there or not. As far as I know,
right,
those things have been given to their rightful beneficiary.
Okay, so that proclamation...
In that proclamation, the report you're talking about is not a report that links to the proclamation, by the way, so that you know.
Okay,
you are talking
just to
about
wrap...
A report, you are talking about a report... Dan, I get it. You insisted that
yes.
You are dealing with accountability. So we're trying to assist you now.
Yeah. No, I'm loving your assistance here. Assist me on this, Pule.
We are now helping you.
Yes, help me on this. In that proclamation, that the president signed, it also then said it must investigate whether the Karikis existed or not. The company that had to provide them was EnviroMobi, of which you were a director, correct?
No, no, I was not a director at the time when the contract was being done.
Oh, when did you resign as a director?
It doesn't matter. I don't have to explain myself to you.
Because CIPC tells us you resigned in 2016, and
it's not even true. You don't know. When I went to Parliament in 2014,
yes.
When I became a member of Parliament in 2014, I relinquished my directorship in companies that would have had dealings with the state.
But you only declared in 2016.
Who says so?
That's according to Parliament's records. You only declared this in 2016.
You must go and check your records.
No, this is Parliament's, on the website of Parliament. You can check it.
It doesn't matter. It no longer matters. I'm not a member of Parliament. So what did you want to do?
When I went to Parliament,
I relinquished my directorship. By the way, sir, this has got nothing to do with you. When I declared and did not declare, has got completely nothing to do with you.
What do you mean? I pay tax in this country. It has everything to do with me.
How does being a director at CIPRO have something to do with you?
Because you were a member of parliament.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So what was I doing before I became a member of parliament?
No, the question is, did you declare in time or did you not declare in time? That's the question.
I'm not going to be doing those things.
Okay, let's move on.
You see, let me tell you, one of the things that you must never do with people that agreed to come to your shows, don't bring people to shows because you want to suddenly demonize them and all of that.
No, accountability is not about demonizing. It's an uncomfortable process.
But account to what? Account to Kaya FM for something that did not...
No, you're accounting to the public. The public is listening.
But what am I supposed to account on here?
We asked you the questions. You answer it. And hopefully those answers will check out by the time the report is finalized and issued. And hopefully it will be made public. But let's move on, Pule, to the activities of the weekend.
I really don't know how... If this is how you handle people on your shows, then it's a bit of a challenge. You know, when you invite people to shows, you tell them straight the issues you want to clarify.
I'm taking my time
to help you understand because I can clearly see that, number one, you don't seem to have a deeper idea of how some of these institutions of state operate or how some of these things are done. You know, you want to tell me when I declared stuff in Parliament.
I asked you and you told me you declared in time. And I told you what Parliament's records say and you denied it.
That's okay. When you find time, because you seem to be quite interested on some of these things, when you find time, CIPRO is available.
You can go
to CIPRO and check when I relinquished directorships in entities that had something to do in government. I did so because I understood what was expected of me when I was a public representative. When the company in question went to do work with a GDAT in Gauteng, I was no longer a director. So the report that is being quoted here by the Sunday Times is erroneous. Actually, I've already advised, for the benefit of your listeners, I've already advised my legal team to really zoom into that and start looking into what are the real issues there. Because it can't be that all the time I get to be asked questions by journalists on things that have never been forwarded to me. Because what they do is that they can only put damage to one's credibility, integrity, and spending. Especially when one has not been questioned, one is not aware of such a report, one only gets to pick up these things when they come into conversation with journalists. You know, it's unfair. I mean, if someone puts forward questions to me, where I've never been asked by anyone in a position of responsibility or authority to account on these things. I'm not a person who runs away from accountability, but I can't account to the media on a report whose origins I don't even know myself. What am I going to say? What about if I say things that I end up incriminating myself? If there's something that involves me and I ought to answer, relevant authorities will have to put questions to me. And I can tell you now, I'm a cooperative person. If there are things that I must answer to or respond to, I will do that because I have not done anything wrong. I have not committed any crime. I have not benefited unduly from any process. Okay. None whatsoever. That's why I'm not worried. That's why I continue. If I was in the wrong and had done something untoward, right, let me tell you what I would have done. I would have been the first to go to the ANC and say to them, I will no longer be able to play my role as national spokesperson because I believe I'm compromised.
Right.
There are things I've done in the past which I believe continuing in my position will only harm the brand African National Congress. I would have done so. If I'm in the wrong, I will not wait for anyone to tell me to step aside. I will do it myself. I will go to the ANC and tender my own resignation because I understand why and why all of us as leaders of the ANC must hold dear to the credibility of the movement. So it cannot be that I insist on playing a role in the organization when I know that I'm this compromised person. Why will I do that?
Yeah.
When the ANC is speaking so, can I just conclude? When the ANC is speaking so tough about corruption, about misdemeanors that really undermine the pact that it is supposed to build with society, including the renewal program that the ANC is supposed to champion, that we, who happen to occupy these rare positions of leadership today, have got to be seen championing and driving forward. So we must not be questionable characters when we carry forward such programs.
Has the SGO or the Integrity Commission asked you about this at all yet?
But why will they be asking me about something that doesn't exist? The Integrity Commission of the ANC is a serious body in the movement. They will not ask, why will they question me on that? This doesn't exist.
So the SIU is inventing stuff, basically.
You have got their numbers. You can ask them specifically about me. Remember, there is no way. The report I saw when the Sunday World was insisting on this, I saw in the report, the spokesperson of the SIU had clarified the Sunday World at that time that I'm not under any form of investigation by the SIU. It's on record. So what must interest us is the timing of the Sunday Times article.
Do you suspect political foul play?
I don't know. I'm just saying it must be a matter of interest because they are saying this is a report of 2019. How can a report of 2019 surface on the eve of elections?
Okay.
What a coincidence.
But the president only signed the proclamation this year.
No. The report and the proclamation are not the same thing. Let me
help you here, Pule. A report happened. The president, the SIU then said, well, we need to investigate further, but we need the president to give us a proclamation to give us the powers to investigate further. The proclamation that was then signed was specifically for the SIU to investigate further.
I don't think you read the report. There is no way.
Of course, because it's not public.
No, but okay, let me help you.
Did you read the report?
When because journalists that were writing this story forwarded me the report. When the City Press was doing this thing, I got to be interested. I wanted to see what they were basing their reliance on. So I read that report. There were secondment from one institution of state to the Premier's office in Gauteng. People had put up a report which was littered with inaccuracies. The one glaring inaccuracy is that the very report you are asking me about says I was a director in 2017 when I was not a director. It's factual. But it's written in that report that you are asking me about. It says I was a director when I was not a director. By the way, just to remind you, maybe you might have forgotten, I previously took the Mail and Guardian to the Press Ombudsman on the very same detail that where they wanted to claim that I was a director and I was not a director. The Ombudsman ruled in my favor. The judgment of the Press Ombudsman is available online. You can check it.
Right. So let me get this.
Basically, to conclude, I was having to answer this question for the past 3 years, if I'm honest with you. For 3 years, I was dealing with one thing that is not driven by facts, that is littered with inaccuracies and all of that. What did I do? Because it doesn't matter. You rightfully put it. It's just that you confused me with a public representative.
You were a public representative as a member of parliament. So let me understand, Pule. So the report does in fact exist. So because earlier on, a few minutes ago, you said this thing doesn't exist. But now we know it exists because the City Press provided you with it. But it's just wrong in fact.
Let me tell you. It formally doesn't exist to me because there has never been an institution of state, whether the Premier's office in Gauteng, GDAT, or the SIU, which had placed the report to me like this.
Okay.
The only people who have ever sent me this report, to be honest to you, are journalists. The first journalist to send me this report was a journalist from the City Press. I forgot his name. You know, and then I got it again from the Sunday World. Now I was being asked about the same report. Nothing changed. Now I was being asked about the same report by the Sunday Times. So it looks like those that are on an overdrive have targeted Sunday publications to drive a narrative that this one is not fit to do the job. Because remember, what you cannot remove from this whole thing is what are sometimes factional plays meant to bar us from doing the work we're expected to do from the organization. I'm not defocused from that. All I can say to you is that if there is an issue formally that requires me to account for whatever role that I would have played, I can tell you now, my brother, I've never ran away from accountability, even on the most difficult of issues, because I've got nothing to hide. People who run away from issues are people who have got nothing to hide.
Okay.
But, unfortunately, the role I play attracts attention. So I'm going to make an appeal that if there is anyone formal out there who wants answers from me, I'm available to provide those answers. I've never run away.
Brilliant.
Unfortunately, this is now left to the media of South Africa to now put forward to me, when no one in a position of authority has ever questioned me about this, including, if you like, I mean, there are government institutions that are being mentioned. You can go ask those government, whether it's GDAT or Ekuruleni or the Premier's office, if they've ever had direct interaction with me. I can tell you now, I've never, not even a single day, have I had an interaction with an official of state about this thing that is now the subject of media scrutiny. Never.
Okay. Bule, the ANC scored a big victory this morning, and I want us to talk about what happened in the Constitutional Court, and I want us to talk about the course of correction that the ANC will now take to get the candidates that it didn't have registered the last time around to get them registered this now. And also want you and I to reflect on the canvassing this past weekend. What did you hear on the ground? And how does that inform how the ANC will position itself campaigning over the next couple of weeks leading up to that election? But before we jump into that, let's take a quick break. We've got Bule Mawe on the line. You are listening to the Monday edition of Point of View. My name is Oliver Dixon, standing in for Os Pamela Mudene this evening. And we're in conversation with the spokesperson of the ANC, Bule Mawe. Bule, big victory for the ANC in the Constitutional Court this morning against the Democratic Alliance. The IEC can now go ahead and register new candidates for the local government election in a few weeks. The ANC, of course, were not able to submit all the names of all the candidates that it had to register ahead of that, and will now have the opportunity to do so again this time around. Has the ANC internally sorted out the administrative issues that led it to not register candidates in time the last time around in the various wards that took place? And will the ANC be able to do it this time around?
I must say that I was taken a little bit aback and by surprise with how the interview started. It does tend to take us out of tune, especially if we must start talking about our own issues and all of that. In future, if such matters arise, I would suggest that we rather ask those questions at the end of the interview. It would not create any harm. But starting with them and then go into the other issues, it's conflation.
That's fantastic, broadcasting coach. I'll take that into consideration. But let's talk about the Constitutional Court.
It's just conflation. You need to allow me to just say what I want to say, because it's important. I mean, our listeners out there, some who are listening are members of the ANC, some are not, and all of that.
Yeah, it's
so
the public.
It's quite important to make that kind of
Don't worry, next time I'll make it as comfortable as possible for you. Let's talk about that Constitutional Court ruling.
I'm not looking for comfort or for special to be handled differently. No, it's not a problem. You are doing your job. You know, I can't tell you how to do your job. I'm just saying.
Bule, you just told me how to do my job.
I'm explaining to you the conflation. I'm saying it conflates the message. You know,
okay.
So I was going to suggest that what we then do is that we set up proper time to now deal and focus with the ANC's. I mean, this issue of elections is going to be with us for the longest of time. So that at that point, we know we are dealing specifically with matters of the African National Congress without having to make ourselves part of the news piece.
Okay, but we've moved on. We're now on a different issue altogether. We can chew gum and walk at the same time, Pule. We are complex human beings. I'm very sure the listeners are smart enough to know that you're now talking about the elections. Do you want to talk about the elections with us and talk to us about the Constitutional Court judgment, which was a big victory for the ANC this morning?
Well, of course, we welcomed the decision of the Concord to dismiss an application of the DA and to have now allowed for the process of registering candidates to have been regularized in the manner that it has. Actually, this is consistent with what the African National Congress has always said, that the right for one to vote is linked to the right for one to be voted for.
Mm.
So if you can participate in elections as a voter, you can equally participate in those elections as a candidate as well.
Mm.
So once you said you are opening the voter's role, you'd also have opened a window for others who might want to participate, once their voters want to participate as candidates, to also be able to participate in that way. You know, this is what our own democratic dispensation is all about. But also, it would have been unfair to allow other parties that would have wanted others excluded so that they could win elections in the manner that they would have wanted to, which would just have been through the eye of a middle, if I'm to use that kind of a metaphor. Because if you believe that you have done sufficient work to garner support on the ground, you should be able to still contest with whomever and not want to embargo, engage in a litigious process that would otherwise bar others from participating in the process.
Mm.
Fair elections can only be declared free and fair if the will of everyone had prevailed, including giving the people of this country in their different communities the fair space to be able to choose from a pool of those that are participating on who should be their representative. Remember, at the end of the day, the biggest stakeholder in this election, or in any election, are the communities, the voter. Mm. So when the voter knows that they are sitting with a bigger bouquet, a bigger choice to choose from, on who should become their leaders, they make informed choices. Because local government is quite an important part of governance. This is where services are being delivered. This is where the waste collection takes place. This is where electricity is being distributed to communities. This is where water, sewage, all basic services are really being accorded or afforded to communities out there.
Yeah.
So it would not have been fair to not have allowed everyone. That's why it was not just the ANC. Now, I've seen that what has been happening is that this was almost characterized as an ANC thing. This was not necessarily about the African National Congress.
But we do know that,
There are many other political parties, including independent candidates,
who
have been disadvantaged by what would have happened on that day when the IEC initially closed for its candidate registration process.
But we do know that part of the reason why this was framed this way was because the ANC, due to what seemed like administrative issues or clerical issues, did not register in time. Are you guys able to do that now?
Well, I can now, I can confirm to the good listeners of Kaya that we have effectively registered all our candidates.
Okay.
By this afternoon, all our candidates have been registered.
Okay.
You know, they've been loaded and everything. So we will now allow processes of the IEC to ensue.
Okay. And did you guys pay for the registration of all of those? Because that was also an issue the last time around.
No. We have complied with everything necessary to allow our candidates to be able to participate in this upcoming elections.
And just lastly, Pule, reflect to me on the weekend, tragic weekend for the ANC with the untimely loss of Mayor Jolly D shortly after canvassing with President Ramaphosa out in Soweto. A big loss to the movement, I would assume.
Well, this has been one of those difficult weekends that, you know, will always etch in our memories, because some of us have had to spend the whole Saturday working with Mayor Mandongo. I mean, I personally started the day with him in Soweto. We were both talking to the SABC at the time, just trying to give the SABC the snippets of the day ahead.
Mm.
We then went on to brief the leadership of the ANC, and they were leading the briefings themselves to tell us of what are the challenges, issues to expect, and all of that. And they made us aware that the problem in Soweto was the whole issue of electricity cuts, which almost all the different townships in Soweto were really raising concerns about. And I would have had a feel of that, because the first stop I went to when I arrived in Soweto was at one voting station in Dure. And the community there was saying, no, if the electricity issue is not sorted, there's not going to be registration going on. We had to speak to them, and we must thank them that ultimately they understood. We had to speak to them and remind them that when the ANC was debased from the city of Johannesburg after the 2016 elections, the plans that were there to be able to move the distribution out of Eskom straight into city power so that you could be able to manage the growing debt, electricity debt in Soweto, that whole arrangement was disrupted. It's only now, by the end of September, that MOU with Eskom has got to then be signed.
Yeah.
It will be after that is signed that all work will have to be undertaken. And these are the efforts that our jolly good fellow, Comrade Jolly, led in the short period that he was the mayor of Johannesburg. He was a humble guy. He came from the ranks of the ANC Youth League, having been chairperson of the Youth League in Johannesburg and secretary of the Youth League, respectively. He also led in the REC of the ANC in Joburg. He has been spokesperson of the region for the past 8 years, up until he was appointed as MMC by the late mayor, Geoff Makubo, to the MMC of finance.
Yeah.
When he took over the position of executive mayor, succeeding Comrade Jeff, he hit the ground running. He was quite humble. I mean, you couldn't really accuse Jolly of some sidekick there. He prioritized delivering services to the people, being an honest servant of the African National Congress, making sure that he prioritized the plight of the people and worked with them to find solutions. I mean, it was humbling to hear how his neighbors in lands have come to characterize him. They all said that they knew him as that one man that you couldn't even say that he was a mayor. Even when he became mayor, or occupied important positions in the city, he still stayed where he stayed from the time when he was still in the youth movement, showing you that he was a grounded person who belonged to the people. The best thing we can do as the ANC is to make sure that we go out, rally as many people as possible to vote and vote for the ANC in the city of Johannesburg in honor of Jolly D. Mandongo, but also to make sure that we resolve the electricity issue for the people of Soweto in his honor, because this is the one foremost thing that Comrade Jolly had prioritized, which he kept on saying to us, this I'm going to make sure I fix. Those of us who are left behind have got to make sure that we pick up the spear and realize this great noble vision that he had for Soweto.
Pule Mabe, thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate it.